We're doing in Yaakov and Tractate Shabbos. We're at the end of the 8th chapter. Amale Rav Huna le Rabba Brei. Rav Huna said to his son Rabba. There's an Amora in Shas called Rabba, the son of Rav Huna. So here we have a conversation where Rabba turns to his son Rabba, and he said to him, Maitaima lo shchichat kamei de Rav Chisda. Why don't I see you often by the classes of Rav Chisda, de mechadedin shmate? Because Rav Chisda gives over things very sharply, and when he gives over his tradition, he gives it accurately. Why don't you come to his classes? Amale my ezi legabe. He says, what am I going to go there for? Dechiazlina legabe. Why would I go to his classes? When I go to his classes, he always discusses things that are mundane. He discusses worldly things. He doesn't discuss Talmud with me. He says, one of the things he taught me is, when you go to the bathroom, don't suddenly sit down quickly and strongly, because a person can tear himself if he's quick to relieve himself. A person should gently sit down and do what he needs to do gently. And don't push too hard. He said the lower aperture is hanging by 3 connectors, and if you push too hard, you can lose it, you can hurt yourself. So he said, I didn't go there to learn about how to go to the bathroom. And he's telling me classes on how to go to the bathroom. So that's why I don't go to his classes. Amale, so the father of Huna said to him, Hu asik b'chaye debriyata. He incorporates in his classes how people should remain healthy. That I'm with b'mili d'alma, and you say it's just mundane, unimportant things. Kol shekin zilegave. He says, son, for sure you should go there. You see, he not only teaches you Talmud, he teaches you how to be healthy. Go. That's what Rav Huna said to his son. Hanitzrach lefanot ve'ino nifna. If a person has to relieve himself, and here we have all these different discussions about a person relieving himself, which came off of a discussion of the rocks that they would prepare for Shabbos, whether those rocks were muktzah or not, which is actually a classical question we have often in Shabbos. If you want to designate something for Shabbat, which is ordinarily muktzah, you're making a kiddush. You're going to put out tables with napkins, with tablecloths. You want to put stones so that the napkins don't fly off. How do you designate those stones before Shabbat? A stone is muktzah. It has no purpose. It's not a vessel. How do you designate it? It shouldn't be muktzah. So the Talmud was discussing the stones that would be designated. That's what they used as toilet paper. So that Talmudic discussion went off into a tangent of many pieces of advice Chazal said about when relieving oneself. So if a person doesn't relieve himself, Rav Chisda and Ravina. Who was Rav Chisda? Rav Chisda was a Kohen. Rav Chisda's daughter was married to Rava. It says Rava would get birds, would come to him, birds like the Jews got in the desert. What was the bird in the desert called? The Slav. So Rava would get Slav every day in the merit of his father-in-law, Rav Chisda. One day it didn't show up, the bird didn't show up, so he said, must be my father-in-law passed away. Talmud says one day Rav Chisda was playing with his daughter on his lap, and 2 of his students were sitting there, and he said, who do you want to marry? So she said, both. So Rava said, but I should be second. And what he said came true. She married, when she grew up, she married the first student, and he passed away, and then she married Rava. And says that when Rava, someone caused the untimely death of his wife, he said to the person, we learned the story a few years ago in the Yaakov class, he said to the person, I could forgive you for everything you did wrong for me. You disqualified my tefillin, you made my business go bad. Everything you did bad to me, I could forgive you for. Can't forgive you for the loss of my wife. That was Rav Chisda's daughter. He always used to call her Rav Chisda's daughter. So that's Rav Chisda. That's the Rav Chisda that Rav Huna told his son, you better not miss his classes. He says important things. So if a person has to relieve himself and does not, Rav Chisda and Ravina, Chadama Ruach HaSholetet Bo. One says that it causes whatever a ruach ra'ah is, maybe that's some type of spirit can take a hold of him. Another one says that it causes his sweat to have a foul odor. It causes a foul odor to come from him from everywhere. He smells badly. And this is something I once saw. I don't know if it's true always, but I've had numerous times where I assisted people who had serious constipation. I'm not talking about minimal constipation. There are people who could be constipated for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And it causes all their bodily fluids, or at least the ones I saw, to have a foul odor. That's what he says over here, that if you delay it, you're causing the body to give off a foul odor. The first opinion said it's a spiritual thing. Tanya, Kamanda Maruach Zohar Mashalet, Bode Tanya, the Talmud says we have a braisa that says that it's a physical stench that takes hold of a person. If someone needs to relieve himself, and instead of going to the bathroom, he goes to the dining hall and eats. That's like an oven that you have all the ash and you don't remove the ash, you put new wood on top of the ash and you try to get a fire going. And that's the beginning of people who have a foul odor. That's the beginning cause, because they don't relieve themselves often enough. The Talmud says, based on Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch says, based on Rambam, that a person should always try to make sure they have clean bowel movements, meaning to go often enough, twice a day, Talmud says, is perfect. You get up in the morning, before you start your day, you end the day, before you end your day. That's if a person gets his body used to it. A lot of it is habit, then a person remains healthy. Rambam says, of most illnesses that come to people, over 90% are because their bowel movements are not the way they should be. Rambam says, if a person's careful to have to take care of that need, so then most illnesses he won't contract. Coming back to here. What if a person has to do his needs, but he's got nowhere to do it? I'm sorry. What if he feels like he needs to, but nothing happens? He can't get anything out. Rav Chista says, Yamod ve'yeshev, Yamod ve'yeshev. This is an alternative medicine. They say this too. He should squat. He should sit down and stand up. Sit down and stand up. And over time, you know, you stand up, walk 10 footsteps, sit down, stand up, walk 10 footsteps, sit down, back and forth. That's why you have kids. They go to the bathroom, they come back to class, and they have to go to the bathroom all over again. And the teacher says, you were just there. Right, but that kid has a bowel issue. I'm saying that's Talmud says, that's one of the ways to get the bowels moving. Rav Hanan min Arda amar yistalek litzdadin. Rav Hanan min Arda said he should, each time he should go one place another. I'm not sure how that's so different than here. Rav Hamnun amar yimashmesh bitzro boto makom. So this is true for kids. Some of you, Bezrat Shem, you'll be dealing with children. So the Talmud says one can arouse the sphincter muscle to excrete by massaging it. So that's true. But don't use this too much. I know someone who whose baby was always constipated, so they'd always stick a thermometer up there and get the baby to relieve himself. But the baby got used to that, and then the baby developed bowel issues because of what they did. Because the baby would always would get constipated, and they'd help the baby relieve himself by sticking up a thermometer. So it's not a good thing to do on a steady basis, from what I've seen. The Talmud says, the rabbi said, try thinking about something else. It'll come on its own. He says, for sure that's going to have the reverse effect. If you don't think about it, it won't come. He said, I didn't mean think of something else. I meant take your mind off of other things. Just think about that. If you focus about it, then it comes. And this is also true. That's like the halacha that says you should relieve yourself before davening. So many people come into davening, they feel fine. Then they ask themselves, do I have to relieve myself? Suddenly they feel like they have to relieve themselves. There is a psychological component. Rav Yirmiyah from the city of Difti said, I saw an Arab that was having serious constipation. He was traveling, and so he stood up and sat down, stood up and sat down, until finally he poured himself out like a bowl, like a pot, like a chiln pot. Tanu Rabbanan, anichnas esudat kevi aleches apamim shdal demot vam nabamim shdes amot v'nifnem anichnas yoshev mkomo. The Talmud concludes the chapter and says, before a person goes into a meal, so he should walk 10 footsteps and sit down, walk 10 footsteps and sit down 4 times, or 10 times, 2 opinions, and then relieve himself and then come and have the meal. Because the Talmud said it's not a good thing for in the middle of the meal. You have to get up, you have to go to the bathroom. In their days, the bathroom was a distance. So Talmud says, make sure you come into the meal clean. We also saw earlier that it's considered healthy. And today, again, alternative medicine also recommends this. That before a person comes into the meal, they should be clean, and then they should fill up on the food they're eating. And with that, we conclude the 8th chapter. Amar Rabbi Akiva. The next chapter begins with a quote from Rabbi Akiva. Minayin la'avodat kochavim u'mazalot shem tam'a b'masa kenida. Okay, this is a broad subject. Number one, we have an idol. Okay, so let's imagine a little Buddha over here. People are bowing to it. No offense to anyone. People are bowing to it. So that is an idol, right? Chazal said that in its own right causes defilement. Torah says you're not even allowed to have a piece of it in your house. Torah says you even have a problem renting your house to a pagan who would bring in his own idol into your house. You're not supposed to have it in your house. So Chazal wanted to ensure that our perception of idols would be the way the Torah said. So the Torah changes the names of different idols, so that we wouldn't call them names of praise, but rather derogatory names. But we have laws of defilement, right? Certain things, if you touch them, you become defiled. The dead, one of the 8 vermins, right? If you touch them, Shmona Shratzim, person becomes defiled. One type of defilement is a woman who has her period, right? Once she has her onset, so then anything she lays on, anything she sits on, anything that her bodily fluids touch, she spits on something, so that's defiled. It seems in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, in the days of the temple, so maybe the husband would go to a separate house or a separate room while the wife and the kids were together when she had her period. I don't know how they could keep it private. I don't think they did. It was part of how everyone lived their lives. There were periods, excuse the pun, when everyone knew the mother was pure, and there were periods when not. So a nida is a woman who has had her onset. Any woman who's had an onset from day one, from the time she's a baby, until she counts 7 clean days and goes to mikveh is a nida. Doesn't matter if right now she's clean and she hasn't seen a period in 3 years. The fact that she had a period and did not go to mikveh, so she remains a nida forever until she counts 7 clean days and goes to mikveh. So Chazal said that an idol, it has this defilement just like a nida. And that even if you just carry it, even if you carry it in a box, even if it's you have, let's say, 10 crates of wine, and on top they put the idol, so it says the mere fact that it's supporting the idol makes everything under it tamei. Everything, how do we know that? Shenemar, the verse says, Tizrem kimo davat seitomalo. The Navi Yeshaya says, scatter the idols like a woman who has her onset. So from that similarity, the Navi compared an idol to a woman who has her period. So just like a woman who had her period, mani dam tamab masa, avavdat kochvim mazalot mitamab masa. So that's what we derive. Now, this worked. Meaning Chazal did this in order to ensure that people wouldn't even handle it. You know, the old joke, Achusid has a store that's not doing so well, and he's selling souvenirs, and he can't figure out what to do. So someone tells him, why don't you sell crosses? And he says, no, I know my store is for tourists, but I can't sell a cross. And he's one day he finally gets the courage. He calls the other side. He's on the East Coast. He calls the West Coast. And the guy on the other line answers, and he says, hi, this is Jack. He does his best to make himself sound like he's not from Chusid, from Williamsburg or whatever. Hi, this is Jack. I'd like to order 30 crosses, 30 gold crosses. So the voice on the other line goes, eh? mit the yoizel or without the yoizel? You want him with the yassi or without the yassi? He's like, huh? So the dealer who was selling it on the other side of the country was a Jew and the buyer. So historically, this was always, I don't know about always, but we've seen periods in Jewish history where the Jewish people had a weak spot for doing commerce in idols. People made a lot of money doing this. And the prophet yelled at them for it, and the rabbis tried to prevent people. I once had a friend who visited South America, and he brought back a figure of a dog, I think. And when he showed it to me, he said, you know, the seller told me this has all kinds of powers. He said to me, before he sold it to me, he even bowed to it and worshipped it. I said, you know, that sounds like an idol to me. He says, you think? I said, well, if he bowed to it, he worshipped it before he gave it to you, certainly sounds that way. He says, yeah, he certainly believed like it had powers. He says, and what would be the halacha if it's an idol? I said, you're not allowed to bring it back home. You got to get rid of it, you know. So the guy spent a pretty penny. And I don't know if he listened to me, but... So Chazal wanted us not to bring it home. Our kids should not grow up with different idols in the house. And so Chazal said that an idol is defiled just like one of the more severe defilements. Even anything it's placed on becomes tameh. Yes? We'll get back to you.
You can't use it for like... You can't like sell it? You
no.
Like,
no. Yes.
So I had a friend, like a Hindu friend, and a really close friend, and he needed a place to stay. So, but I asked like a Chabad rabbi, like if I could, because he wouldn't bring any pictures or anything, but he had a necklace, you know, of one of the things. So I didn't let him stay, but I gave him money to get an apartment. But probably that counts. But then he didn't end up taking the apartment anyhow. So I mean, either way. So could I have let him stay?
If it'll become relevant, we'll discuss it then. There are practical ways of how to do it.
But that's saying, I'm saying, like he wouldn't do anything to me about it. You know.
I understand. Or, so we usually recommend. There are ways out of it. I'm saying there are ways to ensure that when you're housing someone, they don't bring it into your house.
I asked the Chabad rabbi, and he's like, he gave a whole story. Like, if people don't like to have their shoes, like people don't like shoes in their house, so you know it's a courtesy to take them off, right? But to my friend, he felt like it's more important. You know, it's not like shoes, so.
Avraham Avinu asked the Arabs to clean off their feet before he brought them into the house because he knew they would worship the sand on their feet. I'm saying that's a story already in Torah. So there are ways around it. I'm saying, depending on the scenario. We had a guy in the...
necklace, and it's nothing in their religion. He just feels like he's doing it for himself. Like
okay.
That's idolatry.
I think you have to see case by case. It's not... Once we know the concept exists, so if it'll come up, we'll check each case. Taninan, question or onward? Okay, we have a Mishnah. Yeah? No?
How about the cross without anything on it, just the cross? Is it also...
I don't know enough about it. I
No, okay, we probably don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, they believe that it has powers too.
Don't know. Taninan, we learned Vayesimu Lehem Bal Brit LeElohim. It says that in the days of Judges, the Jewish people started worshipping one of the forms of Baal called Baal Brit. The Talmud says Ze Zevuv Baal Ekron. In the city of Ekron, Philistine city here on the western coast, there's a city of Ekron, and the people there used to worship a zvuv. According to one medrash, they had this huge fly, like the size of a room, and they'd come in and worship that fly.
A living fly?
No.
A dead one?
A figure of a fly, an idol of this big fly. Yes?
Is that any way connected to the sin of Ekron that he took from Yericho? Or?
That was Achan.
Melamed shekol echad ve'echad
asa dmut yirato. The Talmud says every Jew would make a little figure of this fly and manicho b'toch kiso, carried around in their pocket, kivan shezochla, anytime they thought of that idol they were worshipping, motziya mitoch kiso, they take it out of their pocket, a little fly, mechabka, they'd hug it, umenashka, and they'd kiss it. That's where the Jewish people were holding in the period of Judges. That's how steep they were in idol worship. They carry it around in their pocket, make sure it's taking good care of them, right? Amar b'chanina ben Akavia, mipnei ma amru sfinat ha'yordin tme'a. Why did they teach that this ship that's called Sfinat ha'yordin can be defiled? Ordinarily, we assume that once a vessel is of a certain size, so it's no longer a vessel. It cannot get defiled. That's the question of whether you can make a portable mikvah, right? Once you have a certain size, so then it's that size precludes the item getting tumah, the size of a mikvah. Where else is this relevant? This is also relevant if a couple is going to be in a room. So they cannot be intimate in that room if there are sfarim in the room, unless the sfarim have two covers on them. But the sfarim can also be in a large vessel, and then, even if it doesn't have two covers, that's okay. There can be a door that closes. If it's like our closets constitute a different room, you close a closet door, so then the sfarim are in a different room. This is going to be relevant when you guys get married. The night of the wedding, you might go to a hotel or somewhere. You'll have your tefillin with you. You'll have a knapsack with sfarim. So your tefillin are wrapped in the tefillin bag, and then they're covered by the knapsack or whatever you'll have them inside. But let's say you brought along some sfarim. Let's say you brought along your siddur. So again, if it's wrapped in two wrappings, that's okay. Same thing with going into the facilities. You want to take it with you. It's got to have two wrappings. But if it's in a vessel that's so large, so then sometimes you have stuff like that. You have, let's say, what would we have? A chest. Yeah, so then you don't have to cover everything with two covers. Sometimes you have beds that are very large underneath. They have storage space. So if we'd reach that volume, which very often we do, so then that would also constitute their own domain. Yes?
I thought ships on land can get too
much. Oh, so why is the Jordan ship, can it become Tamei? Because this is a ship that was carried on dry land as well. They used to load it on dry land. You're right. Here, that's the Gemara's answer. A person shouldn't ever withhold themselves from going to Beis Medrash, even for an hour, even for a minute. Don't miss out. Why? Because sharei kama shanim nishnet mishna zo bevet midrash, we kept learning this mishnah for years, velo nitgala tama, we never knew the reason why. Ad shebar bichanani ben Akiva upirsha, till the day Rabbi Chanani ben Akiva came to Beis Medrash, and he gave out the answer. So you gotta stay tuned, you're gonna miss something. It's one of the reasons I feel bad that classes are recorded. It's great that classes are recorded. It's great that people can catch it online, but it also creates a temptation where people sometimes say, I'll catch that class online. And that's an incorrect approach. Chazal said, don't miss out. In Beis Medrash, every minute there are new things that are discussed or uncovered. Yeah?
And was idol worship such a big desire because of the surrounding? Because all the other nations did it?
No. So there was definitely that influence. We can understand it on two levels. Let's begin with the level that Chazal say, which is so long as in the first period temple there was prophecy, so Hashem also, to balance out the prophecy, Hashem gave, call it forces or desires to tap into forces of idol worship. And so in Jerusalem itself, you had people who were promoting and pursuing idol worship to the point of burning children to these gods. When the temple was destroyed and then the second temple was rebuilt, so the men of the great assembly, whatever way they did it, it says in the Psukim and Prophets, and then the Talmud expands on it, they uprooted the desire for idol worship. So ever since the second temple period, we don't have such a desire. No one here is running out to buy a little idol to bow to. It's in the days of the first temple, people had a tremendous desire for it. We can only imagine that it's similar to the desire for promiscuity. People want to have relationships with women. Mm-hmm. So why? If you think about it logically, there's no logical reason why. There's an emotional drive. There's no if anyone would think logically, you know, there's no.
Why it's nature to love your opposite.
Oh, we're not talking about love here. We're talking about the desire for a specific act. We're not talking about connection. The desire for that act is Hashem created a drive within a person. So there's a drive. There's no logic to it. It's an emotional drive.
Idolatry, the proper worship is like pornography to intimacy. I think. I don't know,
but wait, I'm just saying that we in order for us to understand their drive, we have something similar in our lives, where a person has to control himself not to look, because if he looks, he's going to be attracted. Do you have to control yourself when you walk down the street not to look at an idol? I used to walk in Chinatown, and there were people worshiping to all kinds of idols. And it was funny. It wasn't interesting. It was funny to see mature people take this little idol and put it in front of their fruits and bowed it and prayed it. It never aroused in me even the slightest inkling. Why don't I find out what they're doing there, right? Maybe there's something to it. We don't have that Yetzer Hara today. But by the same token, if we were really, really logical people, if it wasn't about our desires, so then we'd have no desire to run after women. The idea you're saying, people want to connect, they want to have a relationship, they want to love and be loved, that's something else. But the desire, the fact that the most thriving industry on the internet is pornography, and that there's this unusual desire that man has to pursue women, there's nothing logical about it. Hashem created such a desire. It's a reality. But it's not a logical reality, it's an emotional reality. Chazal say in the days of the first temple, people's desire for idol worship was no less. And that the men of the great assembly changed on a Thursday night. We can discuss how exactly they did that. Coming back to here, so that's the first level of understanding. Why were they into idol worship so much? Because there was that natural desire in the days of the first temple. The idea of neighbors affecting them, we can discuss Bezachim next class. I have to pause now. But if you want, there is a part 2 and a part 3 to this. We can begin with that next class.